In the early days of the internet, radical libertarians were scattered, lonely, and faceless. Without direction, they resigned to scour the web, sifting through content providers in a wasteland plagued by YouTube demonetization, Facebook jail, and covert internet censorship. But then, in 2017, the Libertarian Union was formed. Finally, the average Joe libertarian could find a thriving community of independent podcasters and content providers, all in one convenient location. At Libertarian Union, we'll always have the latest news, interviews, discussions, and even movie reviews. With hundreds of episodes and more added all the time, you'll always find something fresh at libertarianunion.com.
Okay. Hey, what's up, guys? This is Tony Rockamora. Welcome back to the State of the Libertarian Union. This is the July edition, and we have a bunch of guys on the and I do mean guys on the show tonight. So again, I'm Tony Rockamora from Don't Waste Your Hate. We are here to discuss all things libertarian tonight. So I'm gonna pass it off to Daniel from Actual Anarchy. Daniel, how you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to be here. Once again, this is the biggest group we've ever had, so I appreciate each and every one of you joining. We've got other members of the Libertarian Union, and I think we just had our second female member join us, the Happy Libertarian. And so look for a page from her on libertarianunion.com, and her podcast will start showing up in the feed. My podcast is the Actual Anarchy podcast and also the Last Nighters podcast, where we talk about movies from a real unconventional film analysis perspective. Thank you, Kenny, for the tagline. And our latest episode is The Hunger Games, just came out today, so do check that out. It's actualanarchy.com/87 and also lastnighters.com/30. The other recent news is I was on with Johnny Rocket of Blast Off with Johnny Rocket last Friday for an interview, and it was a lot of fun. So if you want to hear more about the projects that I do, do check that out, and that can be found at thelaunchpadmedia.com. The is important for the URL, otherwise you'll end up on some random website. So anyway, let's pass it off to Nick Pacone, because you're showing up on my screen right now, my man.
Right on. So I guess you'd mentioned earlier, a good topic is the fact that we have all these very high-profile libertarians joining the Libertarian Party right now, and people that I think you would have probably not expected to at any point to be joining. I think the most recent was actually on Friday evening. What's his name? See, I already said it. Stephen Kinsella actually joined, which I kind of never expected that one to happen. But, you know, him along with Woods, Dave Smith, Mance Rader, Jason Stapleton. It's a lot of high profile people joining. And what's been really funny is that if you follow the LP National, who never have the time for any of these guys, actually put out a, I think it was a tweet or a Facebook post the other day, welcoming all of them to the party. It was very, very tongue in cheek, I think.
So Nick, jumping the gun just a little bit. Who are you? What's your show about?
Oh, okay.
But that is a great topic, and we should get into it once we get through our little
2 minutes. I'm Nick from the Sounds Like Liberty podcast, one half of it. We talk about music and libertarians and libertarians and music. That's pretty much the whole idea. Fight that culture war. I want to hear from Kenny. What's Kenny do?
Hey, guys. Kenny from the Wizardly Wisdom podcast. I haven't really been doing many podcast episodes recently, any actually, because I've kind of been focusing on real life stuff, which happens to everybody. And then I was inspired by what Nick brought up, the you know, a lot of interest in the LP and activism in the LP from high level, high profile libertarians, as well as you know, the Libertarian Party Mises Caucus that has gotten a lot of support and, you know, made organized quickly and had a presence in their convention. So I'd be happy to talk about that more once everybody has a chance. Tony, do you want to update on Don't Waste Your Hate?
Yeah, not much new going on with us, to be honest. We're just continuing on our regular shows. You know, we do political, social commentary, you know, from a libertarian perspective in most cases. And, you know, it tends to be pretty casual and we have a good time. So check us out at don'twasteyourhate.com. I think the last episode was 46. We're going to have a number 47 coming out soon. And my co-host Jeff is here. Jeff, say hello to the folks.
Hello, folks. What's going on, guys? As Tony said, not a whole lot to report on. Just we keep casual, shoot the shit, talk about what's in the news, what's got us fired up that night. Usually with various types of booze poured on top. So glad to be here, though. Glad to see the group growing, and that there's a girl. That's exciting.
Yeah, maybe next time we'll have one of them on.
Allegedly.
And okay, so we'll pass it off to Steven at the Peace and Liberty podcast.
Hey, what's up, guys? Most of y'all know me. I host the Peace and Liberty podcast. Switching over to a Monday, Wednesday, Friday format. Monday through Friday is just not going to work because I'm about to start a really, really tough college semester. I'm about to take like 6 classes. So other than that, I've been doing a lot of reading. I've been working on a lot of presentations that are going to lean to much more in-depth episodes. I'm going to do a really in-depth series on the Federal Reserve because that one's just a little bit too untouched in the libertarian sphere. I mean, it was only back in the Ron Paul days when we used to talk about ending the Fed and stuff like that. Nowadays, it's more about like social issues or whatever. So I think libertarians need to know about the stuff. So I'm working on a lot of new material.
Awesome. And how about you, Theis? Theis, I haven't been on any type of podcast with you yet. Why don't you tell us about your show? And it started recently. Did you start it yet?
No, I'm not. I haven't premiered yet. So so that's kind of a work in progress. But yeah, so I'm Theis van der Linde. I'm Dutch. And so because I'm in the Netherlands, it's right now it's like midnight. So that's why the light is a bit weird. I have a couple of episodes where I have one episode recorded, and I'm working on recording more episodes right now, and it's going to be law and liberty and a sort of a perspective like that. And yeah, I got into this through Patrick, who couldn't be here right now, but yeah, that's sort of my story.
So are you going to be talking specifically to Europe, you know, European Union issues, or what is your focus? Law, obviously, but.
Yeah, it's I definitely want to cover the European side of things because I think on this side of the Atlantic, yeah, there's not a lot of libertarian content. So I definitely want to cover both news and law issues, but I also want to cover just global libertarian affairs. Yeah.
Very good. Okay. All right. I think that's everyone. So, Nick, let's go back to that Libertarian Party stuff you were bringing up. So did you happen to hear, I think Tom Woods released like a roundtable episode and all those guys talked about what their plans were going to be. I haven't heard it. So
it was a Lions of Liberty episode that he forwarded. But yeah, I listened to it. It was interesting because there's a lot of different types of libertarians that you have represented there. I was a longtime Stapleton listener. I've recently started listening to him again. He's difficult at times because he gets a little too police and force friendly for someone who believes in the NAP. But you know, it takes all kinds, I suppose. Not everybody's as far along the same journey, perhaps. But they all had fairly similar reasons for wanting to join the party. I think Jason sums it up best, where he's like, well, hey, I didn't want to be left out because all these people are becoming a part of something. Maybe this thing, maybe this thing will become something, you know, and who wants to be left out? And we got to thank Michael Heiss for that. He's the one that actually got everybody interested in it. We should take like to our firsthand source, though, Stephen Clyde over there, the guy who's been bumming around with the Mises guys for a week. See what he thinks of the whole ordeal. I'm sure he's got the firsthand knowledge of it at this point.
Well, it's kind of interesting. One of the things Nick Sarwark asked Josh Smith as a question during the debate is, you know, what are you going to do to raise money? Meaning, like, what experience do you have raising funds? And I think looking back at it, Josh would have probably given a better answer had he had more time to think about it. But in reality, membership under Sarwark is way down. Membership, people just actually getting a membership and being part of the LP. So this is kind of a resurgence of the LP based on people that Nick Sarwark was trying to keep out of the party, because remember he said the Mises Institute's the preferred think tank of Nazis. He pretty much literally said that. So I think Tom Woods really set it off. And, you know, I think Sarwark tweeted that, you know, Dr. Woods, I don't see you being on record as being part of the LP. And Tom's like, oh, well, I'll take you up on that. And that kind of started like the domino effect, really. I think most of us care about the LP. I mean, we know what it was rooted in when it was founded. Like, if you look back to like the 1972 platform, that was pretty much all Rothbard that wrote that. So there is something to the LP. And I think a lot of people are quick to trash the LP and saying that, oh, you know, it's a done deal. They're never going to have anybody that can be elected. There's, you know, never going to make a name for themselves. But I think some of us do care about the party and just want to kind of resurrect what it was founded on. Versus just dumping the party and like, what are you going to do? Try to start another party? I mean, that's not going to work out in reality. So I think there's a possibility that we can get back to real libertarianism, but I can just tell you from being at the LP convention, it seems like more than not, just I wouldn't say like bad libertarians, just like completely not intellectually interested in, like, you know, reading or doing anything like that. There's interested in like a few basic ideas, kind of like the left and the right. So that's pretty much what I see. I don't think Tom Woods is going to go run for chair. I think he did it more as kind of like, you know, ha, you know, look at me now, Nick. You thought I wouldn't do it. I did it. And people kind of followed. I don't know if it's much more than that right now, but back to my original point is that membership is starting to go way up, and a lot more people are paying that $25 to get the card versus under the 2 years of Nick Sarwark. I mean, membership's way down. So it was kind of funny that if I was Josh, I would have responded, well, Nick, like, what experience do you have raising money? I mean, like, membership's way down.
In response, actually, to that, I mean, did you listen to the Lions of Liberty episode with the roundtable on it by chance?
Yeah, I listened to it.
I was going to say, because Tom Woods specifically said he's in it for the long haul. He's given it at least 10 years to see what happens and plays out. So
yeah,
I think that might be a little bit more.
When all that happened, people were expecting Tom Woods to like run for chair, like participate in debates. And Tom's like, you know, hold on, where did I say that? You know, all he did was join the party. But yeah, I think there is the possibility that after the Human Action bash, which was really great, a lot of great people showed up, that there is kind of like the spirit that we can revive some of these ideas versus just ditching the party. Because a lot of us after Gary Johnson were just like, oh man, this is impossible. We're better off just like going out and just like talking to people versus trying to, you know, bring back the party. But I kind of noticed that a lot of people that get involved with the party and get really involved with it kind of take on the political attitude that, okay, let's just go out and raise money, let's just go out and do this and that. And they kind of stray away from like what we're actually getting in the party to do, which is to spread ideas. You know, what would make me donate to the Libertarian Party is if they sent me once a month, instead of asking me for money once a month, send me like an old newsletter or send me like an old article or something that I can learn something from. Then it's like, okay, like these people actually care about the movement. But they send the most ridiculous mail to us. And if you're an LP member, you know, so you get the most ridiculous mail from them.
Deleted and it's like immediately.
Yeah, it's like a half page of nothingness plus like a place where you can fill out, you know, if you want to pay some or if you want to donate. So I don't know. I just think their marketing strategy is terrible. For people that are supposedly worried about marketing, this is what people say about Sarwark, that, okay, he's not the greatest libertarian ever, but he's a good marketer. He can set up events, and, you know, people show up to the events. Like, that's their argument.
That's he's crazy. Terrible at it.
Yeah, he's terrible. He is terrible at it, but that's not how people view it. I mean,
he can run a meeting.
Yeah.
You know, well, okay. Parliamentary procedure is only a small part of it, right? At least as far as spreading the message goes. So, Kenny, as far as I understand, you're part of the LP in your local area. Is that right?
Yeah. So I you know, on to what he's saying, I agree with a lot, almost everything that he said there. And it is an issue. And so my thought was, you know, I knew all you guys have been involved with this for a while and done some podcasting and things like that. And I just wasn't really getting traction myself. And I'm like, well, what else can I do? You know, we already have 10 guys that I know that are all smart, all doing what I want to do better than me. why should I keep focusing on that? And so I thought, well, what can I do? And I'm like, the local level has got to be where some action is happening. You know, at some level, online presence and podcasts and everything is not going to be able to reach everyone you want to be able to reach. And so what you can do, and my thought is, try and have some events. That's what I'm wanting to do. So I, you know, joined the LP, joined the OKLP, and now I am involved with a group of people that are trying to organize the Tulsa County Libertarian Party, where I live. And I'm trying to position myself to be the chair of the organization to try and direct some events that would be, I think, good as of, I mean, as a party, you know, you want to try and win elections. But in Oklahoma, it's pretty hard for a libertarian to even get any attention. So I want to just have some events, meet the candidates, raise awareness, you know, get in touch with people and make one-on-one connections with them and be able to explain to them person to person. Because, you know, online, we're inundated by political messaging all the time. And so I think a lot of people are on guard for any new ideas coming at them from the online perspective. Not that they're not paying attention, but they just already have in their mind what they're thinking, and something that confirms that thinking they agree with and something that is challenging to that thinking, they're going to automatically be turned off to. And I think that perhaps, I mean, my experience in having the first meeting and getting people interested is that it is a little bit easier to get it people engaged in person. And so my thought has been, I'm just going to try and ride this wave as far as it'll take me and, you know, see what happens. I really am, you know, cautiously optimistic that this could be a net positive. And so, yeah, that's kind of what I've been trying to do.
Yeah. All the progress we're going to see, it's not going to come from the party. You know, what is the party? It's going to come from people doing localized things, whether it's just, you know, getting a few people together near you that, you know, that group of five people will go talk to 10 people and those 10 people will go talk to 100 people. That's all you can really hope for. All you can really do is just try your best. And I think the best answer for why are more people joining the LP is, well, they see an opportunity there now, whereas they didn't see that opportunity in the aftermath of the Gary Johnson campaign. They just felt like, okay, this is a lost cause. I'm going to go do my thing. But there is a chance now. There is a, you know, a Misesi and Rothbardian wing of the Libertarian Party now that we can look to. And honestly, they've done a lot of great things. You know, Michael Heiss is a really good friend of mine. He's just a really he does way more than I'll ever be able to do. Like the amount of, he does all the phone calls. He reaches out to everybody. Like I don't have the aptitude to do that. Like I'm smart enough to read some books and write some articles. You know, I'll probably do some good things in my life, but it takes a certain type of personality to be like. So we're lucky to have people like Michael Heist to actually get out there and like try to reach as many people as possible, like organize whole campaigns, organize whole events. Like, damn, I don't know how he does it. But yeah, I think the progress we're going to see is going to come locally. It's not going to come from, oh, the Libertarian Party made a decision. Like, I don't even know what that means, you know?
Well, what's funny, and piggybacking on that with the Michael Heist thing, I was recently made one of the moderators on the Mises Caucus Facebook group. And I'm sure Ken can tell you because he's involved in one of the group chats. But the big thing that absolutely everybody stresses in that group is just the action. If you're not out there doing something ground and pound, you're wasting everybody's time. Like the group will immediately, if they think someone's there who's not actually out there doing stuff, you're just gone. You're detracting from what we're supposed to be doing. And I think that's the thing that they have that the other people within the LP don't have, is that the, just that desire and drive to actually act, go out and do something. Like when you go and talk to Madeline Albright there, boss, you know, go out and do something, make a scene, push.
Yeah. I mean, those things take some motivation. Like I would have never thought to do that, but it's just like, huh, I've seen a few friends like get out and like have do a few great videos, and all it really takes is like a few great videos to get your name known. So yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and on the Mises Caucus issue, I'm also involved in Oklahoma trying to set that up, and we're having a meeting this week where I'm trying to get people involved in being in leadership for the Mises Caucus in Oklahoma. But there is, I'll tell you what, there is heavy, heavy resistance from entrenched interests in the party, who I think we all know of well and can identify readily. The people that are really want to take, and I always hate going to the left-right paradigm, but just a leftist seeming message that's very emphasizing on social issues and very emphasizing on libertinism, and you know, not pure what we would consider, you know, plumb line thin libertarianism or anarcho-capitalism or anything like that. And there is heavy, heavy resistance from people just, I mean, and mean-spirited too, like associate you with negatively perceived groups, to put it nicely.
So I would kill for that.
Yeah.
I believe I'm technically in charge of the Ohio Mises Caucus, and I've got virtually, I think I might have 25 people in the Facebook group and maybe five of them that actually kind of show any like involvement. And when I'm involved in like the other Ohio groups, I get just almost entire apathy. I can't, like, the only thing I'll like see in these groups, nobody engages. And what I do see is about a quarter of the posts are all fuck Trump posts. And why, as a libertarian, should I give a shit about Trump? He's just another figurehead like every other figurehead. Let's talk about something that actually matters.
I wonder if the root of the problem is that the Mises Caucus is kind of rooted in like anti-political activity, like in the sense right. that like we all hate politics. For example, I'm starting a Young Americans for Liberty chapter. It's me, one other guy, and like supposedly the president. I haven't even met the president yet. And I hate the idea of a president. You know, it just makes it sound ridiculous. But you know, they called me over the phone to recruit me the other day. And I thought, you know, I was trying to like talk libertarianism, like how'd you get into libertarianism? Like their whole thing is, you know, we want to make sure that you're joining Young Americans for Liberty to like follow our message that we want to get there and talk about like free speech laws and stuff like that. And, you know, it's almost as if they get offended when I talk about things like the non-aggression principle and like the actual foundation of libertarianism, because it detracts from their political aims. See, they want to get in there and like, you know, step one, like, you know, get ourselves involved with the political process. Like two, try to change this law and that law, versus my attitude is just be against all of it. I don't really care if you run, but like, don't vote for any tax increases. Don't add to any, what are you going to go out and create a law? I mean, I'm only interested in you running if you're going to go out and like get rid of laws. It's really all I care about. So we're kind of rooted in an anti-political mentality versus they want to get in there and use the political system. Those are just two polar opposite. I almost can't get along with a lot of libertarians in that act like that.
Aren't they Republicans?
I don't know. I think
I always like, assume they're a Republican group.
I would say so, yes.
Well, it's okay, so Libertarian Party, it's not easy here in the States, but I can imagine Theis can enlighten us a little bit on how good we have it relative to him. You know, at least we have an LP that we can, you know, maybe try to influence and get involved in. What's the libertarian situation over there, Theis?
Yeah, good question. So I am a member of my Dutch LP, and yeah, it's really tiny, like a couple hundred members, and yeah, we are getting more active, but yeah, we're definitely not like a third party, you know. We're like the 20th party. It's a very different system, but yeah, it's in the US, the Libertarian Party definitely has a lot more exposure, and a lot of people have heard of it somehow. So yeah, it's I would say we are quite small, but we are quite committed, and we are quite a lot of principled libertarians who have read their stuff. So that's a positive, I would say. Yeah.
Now, I spent some time in Europe, and I know a lot of times it's like coalitions between multiple parties. Is that the same situation over there in the Netherlands?
Yeah, exactly. So it's a parliamentary system, which means that you never really have one party who controls the government. So it's sometimes it's two, but for instance, right now we have four different parties who have to work together and then they sign a big agreement, and that's how they try to govern. And if one of the parties decides they're not interested anymore, then new elections are called. So that's how the system works here.
All right, so we've talked to the LP people. Let's talk to some of the non-LP people. I am included in that. So Daniel, I assume you have not yet joined the party.
Well, I do respect a lot of the intention of the Mises Caucus. I do believe that if you are going to be trying to influence the culture, you got to go where the attention is paid. And every 4 years, the election cycle gets a boatload of attention, and it's life or death. It's the most important election ever. So it's all this, in my estimation, undue attention, but the people are there, the earballs are there. And so that's how I got to know about Ron Paul. If he hadn't been there, I wouldn't be sitting here today talking to you guys. So I have to leave space open for political platforms to be used as a megaphone, and also in an attempt to influence the culture and drive the ideas home. You know, we're trying to educate, we're trying to share with people the idea of self-ownership and that no one should have undue authority over you without your consent. You know, we're the modern day abolitionists, and it sounds a little bit crazy to say that, but I mean, if you went back 200 years, people thought slavery was a normal thing. It was a part of their daily lives. Just like today, most people think that the state is an appropriate and moral and legitimate thing, even though Congress has a single-digit approval rating. Everyone hates Trump. He's literally Hitler. I mean, this is the system that they support, yet it begets all of these terrible things that they hate. And so it boggles the mind, the cognitive dissonance that these people have. So I think that using the political platform as a megaphone and as an educational tool, also in a defensive manner, right? I used to be more along the lines of voting is violence. Now, I think that it still kind of encourages them, even if you do vote. But if you're voting against additional laws or additional tax increases, things like that, I can leave room for that. That was an insight that Adam Kokesh gave me after our discussion with him when we talked about Idiocracy. It was our 30th episode, so actualanarchy.com/30. And he basically made the point that if voting is violence, then you're saying that firing a gun is violence. But firing a gun is not always violence. It can be defensive. It can be for fun. It can be for practice. It can be whatever. It really depends on what's downrange, what you're shooting at. And so much the same way voting can be viewed the same way.
Hey, I got a question for you, Daniel, because this is actually something that's really, really been playing on me for a couple weeks now, listening to the Lava Flow a lot lately. And the thing that I keep coming back to and dealing with, like, the full on, let's all just walk away from this and delegitimize it, the whole just let's not pay attention to it anarchy, is the simple fact that how small of a percentage of the population do you have to do that? If you look at how many people actually vote already, you have like a quarter of the people that can vote in the whole country actually showing up to vote. Like, how small does that number have to get away to delegitimize it? Do we have to have 1%, 0%? I mean, literally, quarter of people don't give, like, only give a shit. Like, where are we at?
Yeah. Have you ever seen the map? Like, the states that Hillary won and the states that Trump won and the states that none of the above won because no one voted.
Landslide.
Yeah, landslide. You know, my selection never wins, even though it's the most
votes every time.
Yeah. But it's, yeah, Nick, I think you're right. I mean, it's hard to find that point where people are going to stop believing in this. I agree that there's a small percentage of people who actually make the vote that decides things, but everyone else kind of just goes along. You know, they acquiesce to the choice, and they're like, oh, it doesn't matter, or you know, my 1/1,000,000th of a vote isn't going to make a difference. And I mean, they're kind of right, but you know, I don't blame them for not showing up, but I don't think they're doing it for any principled reason.
Okay.
All right, I'll make the best case I can for why you all should join the Libertarian Party. It was something that Tom said a few weeks ago in a lecture. He talked about how Murray Rothbard was fully aware that when he said there was only 25 libertarians in the world, that he actually meant it. Did he ever quit? Did he ever just say, okay, there's only 25 of us, you know, I'm just going to stop writing, I'm going to stop learning? He did the exact opposite. He did an incredible amount of work despite that. And so what would Murray do? I think he would look at this and he would just be astounded at the revival of Austrian economics and, you know, true libertarianism that does exist out there. I think we're too far to quit now. I mean, I personally don't think it's feasible to try to reform the whole Libertarian Party, but if there's a chance that, like Dan was saying, that we can get the ideas out there, because that's all I think most of us just really care about, ideas. Like, we want to spread the message of peace and liberty. We don't expect to see an end Capistan in our time, to be honest, but you know, it's something we dream about. We think about these things. So the ideas are what's important. Kind of getting back to why the people from Young Americans for Liberty really have no interest in my type, because I care about the ideas, and really they want to know, they want to get to know you, see if you're a good political candidate so they can get out and sponsor you and stuff like that. It's just kind of weird. I'm just kind of like not really part of that climate, but I think Murray would look around now and be like, oh, what are you going to quit because there's only, you know, a few million of us? I think now more than ever we can spread these ideas, because I think ideas, to a certain extent, when they die, they die. I mean, it was really, really hard to revive Austrian economics. Think about the fact that when Mises wrote The Theory of Money and Credit in 1912, that wasn't translated till English till I think like the 1930s, by the time Keynes' general theory had come out. So it was already too late to revive Austrianism before Keynesianism came along. And think about how much damage that did. Just the introduction of Keynesian economics and pretty much all the modern sphere. And that's pretty much what we have now. We even have MMT nowadays, God forbid. It was just that one gap in history made the difference between the world we see now and what the world that could have been. So I think we need to fight for the ideas. That's my
yeah. No, so, okay. It makes sense to continue on with the LP. You know, I mean, just to at least, I mean, if you're going to have a Libertarian Party, we call ourselves libertarians. You know, we might as well be involved to some degree in the party. You know, if they're going to have the same name as us. You know, small L or big L. So that's that. And then you're right, Stephen, we do have to get to the real issues at hand. You know, there is one thing between, there's the party, and then there is the ideas that we all have that will truly make society better.
Yeah, it's like, look, everybody already agrees about gay rights and drugs. Like, we already agree about this stuff. You can stop talking about that. There's actual issues that, you know, aren't so obvious to the eye. It's not so obvious that central banks really control our whole system. It's not so obvious. You got to introduce those ideas. But gay rights and drugs and all those, like, things, I mean, you know, people already agree on that stuff.
Well, yeah, most of it, some of it they do, some of it there's still issues. I mean, so Jeff, you posted on our Twitter, I don't know if it was today or yesterday, but something about some police misconduct. Do you want to maybe we could bring up that topic and riff off that for a little while?
Yeah, sure. And before I guess reference what I was tweeting about, I just want to throw in one other perspective as a total apathetic, lazy outsider on the whole LP issue. I just like that it feels like a troll move kind of from a lot of these guys, where there's been so much infighting between the LP guys, and I don't know how to characterize these guys. It's like the reason, like, wing of the libertarian, of like small L, and it bleeds over into big L, where they seem to be more concerned with like the right wing sort of bubbling up, which I think in today's context is kind of nuts. They want to talk about libertinism a lot. They seem to buddy up with a lot of, you know, former Federal Reserve people, and there's the whole Bill Weld issue. And then all the ones that most of us, I think, really revere on the libertarian side, they tend to not be involved. And so there's always like this clashing. Like, I think when Swarzak was on Stapleton the one time, he basically said to him, like, Stapleton was giving him shit about how well he would run, you know, the party if he was in his position. He's like, well, you're not in the party, so I don't want to fucking hear it, you know? Well, look, now all these guys are dumping in. And, You know, I think Matt Welsh gave from Reason, you know, editor in charge of Reason, I think he was pretending like it was an unbiased take on what went down at the convention, but it obviously came off, at least to a lot of people, just dripping with sort of bias and giving a dig at Woods. And so I don't know. I think it's just as an outsider, I think it's interesting. And I hope that some of the criticisms from the people on the outside, it starts getting addressed, like actually talking about real issues, you know, that libertarians care about, like ending the drug war. I mean, there's countless ones that they really don't get into in the Federal Reserve. And one other quick comment, we were talking about economics a minute ago. And I do wonder, with Ron Paul sort of out of the mainstream picture now, one thing you saw when he was very, very active, I mean, was there anything better than, I mean, there was the whole end of Fed thing and what he brought, you know, the just bringing attention onto the Federal Reserve, the concept of Austrian economics, it getting mentioned on like late night shows. You know, there's a couple other, I guess, celebrities that bring up Austrian economics on occasion. But was there anything better than when he got to like question Bernanke right to his face, like once every couple of months, you know, throw these questions to him? And I kind of feel like with Trump, with the economy, quote unquote, like roaring now, and him taking ownership of whatever this thing we have right now is, this economy with the tariffs coming on. I don't know. I feel like the economics argument is taking sort of a backseat. So I'm curious to see what happens in the coming year or two leading up to the next election, especially if we end up having an economic collapse, and Trump, who at this point, you know, when he campaigned, he was, you know, ripping on the economy and calling it sort of phony. And now he's taken ownership of it. If it actually collapses, if that swings the pendulum and we end up getting like a big time socialist in here, either Bernie or, you know, somebody else.
Here's one thing that's absolutely true about the Libertarian Party. It doesn't matter if you have 99 good libertarians. If you have that one libertarian that's the naked guy at the LP convention, or that one guy that, this is a true story, at the LP convention a few weeks ago, there was a guy walking around the LP convention with the pink dildo. It doesn't matter if there's 99 well-educated libertarians. Who do you think the media is, when they're doing their report about the LP convention, which pictures do you think they're going to use? They're going to use the ones of the guy waving around a pink dildo. They're going to use the ones of a naked guy on stage. And that's going to be what libertarianism is presented as. And it's just one of those things where there are a lot of libertarians who just care so little about their image that inevitably they care little about the movement, because deep down they're aware that, okay, like my presence does, you know, affect people's opinions on me before they even learn about what I see. You know, if they see you and they think you look ridiculous, they're not going to hear you. So there's that part. I can go on a rant forever, but that is one thing that's absolutely true, is that the media will spin it in a way that, you know, they'll take Gary Johnson's Aleppo gaffe and make that all of libertarianism.
No,
libertarians. Well, it's funny, in the aftermath, Gary said, well, you can't bomb countries if you don't know where they are.
No, it's a very good point. And even at the local level, we're dealing with this. You know, at the meeting that I had, there was someone trying to say that as a political protest, we should burn the American flag, which all of you, I'm sure, know. I have no problem with that. But as something, if we're trying to get people, you know, mainstream middle America people on board, I don't think that's something we lead with, you know? So yeah. It is.
No, I have a lot of really good racy friends. Like I'll never say their names. They're just really good friends. But you know, if they're like the image you had to see before, like you were getting involved in the ideas, like you probably just wouldn't listen to the ideas. Probably just be like, all right, like this person's crazy. Whatever they're about to say is crazy. And that's just a realistic part of especially political life. Like if you want to be in political life, you've got to know that image is like, I mean, they get one frame of you in a funny, you know, gesture. Like they're going to use that picture forever. They've done it with Hillary and just everybody. You can get anybody in a funny gesture, but imagine if your whole appearance is like that. It's like, well, what do you expect to do?
It's getting kind of long past on this, but I wanted to bring up something that Jeff actually mentioned, because I hear people saying this and it baffles me. Referring to Reason as a libertarian anything. and I'm going to take this from the horse's mouth here, because when that article came out that Matt Welch wrote on the LP convention, I tweeted at him. And the first thing I say is, look, I know you're not a libertarian, but blah, 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 blah. Well, he went and actually responded and I had a thread with him. And at no point did he ever correct me and say, I'm a libertarian or, what do you know about libertarianism? In fact, I'm pretty positive he's even mentioned on the fifth column a few times that he's not a libertarian. So I don't know if, I think that the history of Reason having been a libertarian organization is what people are still glomming onto. But then I mean, there's nothing libertarian about them. They might lean liberty, but they're very not much. Basically, they're about as libertarian as the civil or what do you call it? The
ACLU.
The ACLU is now, which is straight up a leftist organization.
No, it's funny. I side with Larry Sharp, who he does a lot of media. And so just offhandedly, when he was doing this radio show and they were talking about how Reason wasn't covering him, he says, Reason is a poser rag. And I'm just like, that's it right there. I mean,
I have a quick comment. I think that a lot of these faux libertarians are upset because the sloppy seconds of the two major parties are at risk now. You know, they used to make a living off of the fat of disaffected former Republicans and Democrats. And here they are now seeing, oh, there's principled people here that might say, hey, we're not just the third party. You know, if you like your weed and
their biggest fear that, these people want to come in and they want to lower our funding. Whether it be in their little political faction or wherever, just like, oh my God, like these people were like a threat to what we're trying to build up here. Like we're trying to get more donations. And this guy's coming in saying like, hold on, like you guys are spending like $1.5 million on posters. Like, what are you guys doing? Like you should. We're a threat because we want to come in and do less. We want to come in and get rid of laws. So we don't really add anything to their political affairs. Nothing at all.
Like, right, and their entrenched interest is being threatened. So, of course, they're going to be defensive. But go ahead, Nick.
Well, I mean, in the case of Reason, I don't even know that Reason claims to be libertarian anymore. Like, I've never seen, like, a particular credo that says that, hey, we're libertarians and we run a magazine. I believe a lot of the people there are just straight-up leftists. The only reason I have a sense of this is like because they have a lot of them on to the Fifth Column podcast. And as much as I love Camille Foster, I don't know how in the hell he can stand to be in a room that long with either Moynihan or Welch. They're just maddening.
Moynihan's become insufferable. I've been watching him for 10, 12 years, and he's just I don't think the move to Vice has helped in that regard, although I think it's probably been a good fit.
You know, in their defense, they say the same about us, right? I mean, they would be like, I couldn't stand to be in a room with those dang ANCAPs for 10 minutes. So, I mean...
We're all there talking about books, bringing up dates, bringing up battles, and they're just like, oh, you know, we had these very simplistic talking points. Who are these guys that go against what we're saying and add all these stupid facts and dates? We're just super annoying to them. I get it.
Oh yeah, who wants a logical edifice constructed from fundamental axioms? That's not important to anyone.
Well, do any of you guys actually listen to the Fifth Column at all?
Yes,
because I always find it funny. That they refer to Roth, like they always refer backhandedly to Camille about Rothbard, and it's hilarious. It's like, oh, your old uncle, your old uncle Murray or whatever it is. I think they refer to him or some shit like that.
So I'm gonna defend these guys a little bit after kind of taking a swipe at them. Like when I was discovering Ron Paul in 08, I spent a lot of time. Reason.tv was just getting launched, and I was reading.
Reason TV too. It's way better than the mag.
And I'm on the mag right now. And if you go on to so one of the things I really don't like about a lot of the Reason guys and like Matt Welch, I go back and forth with how I feel about him. They seem to take this sort of like petty sniping approach with other libertarians. And it's not to say I don't like infighting, because I think that sort of is the battling of ideas. And if you're, as long as the word liberty is part of libertarian and, we know what we're all fighting for and we're having battles over that, then I think it's generally a good thing. But I get a sense from them sometimes that, I mean, for one, they got the cultural like lefty thing sort of going on, and those, they sympathize there. But also that they just have sort of the small tent mentality, which I'm really against. I mean, if we're going to get people, again, just my view, if we're going to get people to start buying into the ideas of liberty, they're not just going to go from, you know, mainstream sort of apathetic about politics and, you know, have feelings one way or another, you know, on particular issues and not really consistent, to being like, you know, an ANCAP or you know, a minarchist or something along those lines. It's going to take like certain issues where, oh yeah, look at that. And then getting them to care about consistency and like it or not, you know, Reason has a lot of, they're all over Fox. They have a lot of shows. There are a lot of people associated with Reason that I like. There are a lot that I don't. A lot of the sex work, you know, I follow the sex work movement a decent amount. And I forget her name, if someone remembers it, Nicole, but she's like the lead sex work writer at Reason. And she's, again, another like really, really difficult to like read and I find insufferable. But at the same time, if you were to ask me if I thought that Reason, whether or not that they've had a positive influence on like the liberty movement over the past 10, 20, 30 years, I find it, I don't know, someone feel free to disagree, but I find it hard to believe that anyone would say no. But then again, so just quickly on Rothbard. So Matt Welsh was on Michael Malice's show when it was still behind a paywall. And it was kind of uncomfortable. And I think even he was surprised by Matt's responses. Granted, Matt comes from like a non-libertarian background. And I think he carries that, a lot of that baggage with him. But he asked him like, Malice asked him something along the lines of like, you know, can you name, you know, some sort of like influential thinker as part of the movement that you think, you know, you would never want to meet or is overrated or, you know, maybe is not as positive you think. And he said Rothbard, and Malice was blown away. And he went on to talk about how he's got this, you know, this history of bad relationships and, you know, whatever negative things he wants to say about him. And it just, yeah, I really reject this approach that I think these guys take, which
I'd say like, isn't that ironic? You know, Murray Rothbard, who helped found the Cato Institute.
Yeah.
Now look at what Cato does now. They do the same exact, they use the same exact tactics as Reason does. I mean, I don't, like you said, I don't think all the people at Reason are bad. But they, I do think they're rooted in this idea that, okay, if we can just change our wording just a little bit, we'll be able to reach more people. Like maybe Bernie supporters will now come over to our side. They just have this fetish with that idea. So,
And the thing that always baffles me is because, I mean, I unlike most of you, I'm of the left. Like I'm here because of freedom. Like I'm bisexual. I'm about having all of the freedoms. I'm about being as weird as you want to be. I will defend to death Karen Ann Harlow's ability to have pink hair and tell anyone who thinks otherwise to go fuck themselves without question. But the important thing is the things that get us to that point, which are all things of the right, unfortunately. So
that was kind of my point, that the new libertarians use these tactics. They try to reach out to people. Like, this is what Charles Perrella was telling me in a private message, because I was making fun of him, and he like ran into me for 2 hours, and he was saying, you know, I want to be able to reach out to the Bernie supporters and every single person that disagrees with the Libertarian Party. I want to be able to reach them. So it's okay to advocate for universal basic income, because maybe we'll reach some, you know, it's okay to sacrifice our principles so long as we think we're going to get a few more members. So it's exactly them that use those tactics of, you know, giving up principles to do that. But they're saying Rothbard had some bad relationships. What? Because of his right-wing populism. I mean, the idea behind that is exactly that you know, you try to reach out to people who aren't exactly like you, whether even if they're considered alt-right nowadays, and you try to bring them back to, you know, our ideas. It has nothing to do with having these alliances where, okay, I actually support David Duke. I think all he was saying is that David Duke was probably a pretty good scapegoat to reach all these other people in the South.
Well, yeah. Who wants to go full on conspiracy and address some of the things that like Ryan Ramsey has brought up about how he believes that Sarwark from day one is an FBI plant, things like that.
He is I don't want to go down that road.
Opposition.
I don't disagree. And I've also had those thoughts, but you know, it's all hypothetical.
Tom Wood said something not too far off. I think if I recall correctly, he said something along the lines of not that, but that he's like, I'm just theorizing or just throwing this out there, but it just, he has the feel of somebody who is maybe using this as like a launching pad rather than somebody who's really like invested in it.
Ramsey swears up and down that like the tactics that they are using from his perspective are textbook, the things that they use in anti-radicalization that apparently he has involved in education with.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting.
Well, I want, as an aside to that, you know, it is the right wing populism that I think is ascendant right now. And that's why I am especially annoyed by the local LP's insistence on their very, you know, leftist seeming message. And, you know, I get called out for a constantly and guilt by association arguments, all for taking a principled stand saying, I don't care what people's personal nonviolent beliefs are that they express privately or with other people privately. You know, that's not what I'm interested in. I'm interested in spreading the message as liberty as far and wide as we can do it. And if people are willing to work with me that have ideas that I disagree with, that's fine with me. I don't care if you disagree with me, if you want to work with me.
They could care less if you convert a Nazi to a libertarian. All they're concerned about is, okay, you spoke to a Nazi.
No, exactly. And that makes you one. Having a dialogue with someone you disagree with about life, about liberty, about these things, that associates you with them. And then from then on, everything you say is suspect. And every time you try and organize anything, it's all for this greater malevolent conspiratorial purpose. I mean, and this is the narrative that they push in the local LP. I mean, luckily, it's not everyone. Luckily, there are a lot of people that are neutral, that are willing to accept people that want to just work hard and spread the message. So,
They're racist, Gandalf.
No, I know, right? That's it right there. Boom. I now can't share this
I think the right-wing populism strategy, it's one that doesn't sacrifice principles. You're not sacrificing any principles by talking to other people. You are sacrificing principles by actually doing that and telling other people that have nothing to do with libertarianism that, hey, like, we believe in universal basic income. We believe in higher minimum wage and stuff like that. There are libertarians like that.
Called left libertarian. I know. It's crazy.
But that's where you can go two different directions with that. You can say, okay, well, at the moment, you know, there's like this right wing, you know, sort of new right populist movement. We could use that, you know, these guys are sort of like energized. We can go over and try to convert some of their ideas. Or the other perspective, which, you know, I think on the opposing side is you just attack. And there's no like redeeming these people. It's just they're especially like the race thing. Tony and you know, our last episode, we talked a lot about race and how like there's just such like obsession over the race issue, and how it seems to like it trumps every other concern. And yeah, if you have anything in your background that's sexist or racist, or it could even be suggested as that, then you're just done. And if you want to be smeared, that's an easy way to do it. Look, Jordan Peterson fights us all the time because he talks about, hey, I'm totally against identity politics, and I've converted countless people away from the alt-right, yet that doesn't stop people from throwing that in there, right? In his little intro, those are the type of people drawn to him, and he's drawn being right. And so
I always laugh at like how many, like, because if you actually follow or pay attention to any of the membership of the Mises Caucus, there's many of us that are in mixed relationships, and it's like,
no, I know.
I mean, accused of being a racist,
like people with leftist views, but are a little concerned with the hard left messaging as part of the LP message. They're drawn to the caucus too. They're like, this isn't even representing me anymore. It's crazy.
I've been with girls of different races my whole life. I lost my virginity to a black girl. My first like three girlfriends were black. I had like Spanish girlfriends. I had Asian girlfriends. I had all types. I probably dated white girls like the least of the batch.
You're culturally appropriating then.
Well,
yeah, I guess so.
I know this is a little outside of probably the purview, but it brings up Tim Pool's been talking a lot about the way in which people are referring to the election. I mean, they're almost already calling it for Trump just simply based on the fact that the left is doubling down and going further left. And half the reason Trump won is because people thought, you guys are too left. Let's get a little bit more centrist with this. And if you're not going to be any more centrist, we're going to have to vote Republican to spite it. It's like,
did you see that new article that talked about Trump anxiety disorder that's now being...
it's officially a thing.
Trump anxiety disorder. That's like a new thing that was coined.
Yeah, I haven't read the article yet, but I saw that it came out. I'm pretty intrigued by it.
All right. So, if anybody else doesn't, if nobody has anything else to add, let's go back to Jeff. And Jeff, why don't you tell us about that tweet you posted about the popo?
I could gladly take us off the rails again, if you'd like, and down another rabbit hole, and we could just never actually get to this. No, it's just the usual. I've got a hashtag I've been using. It's not my hashtag, obviously, but just not all cops. And it's just, I think all of us are probably sensitive to it, if I could speak for others, but it's cops just absolutely drive me crazy. And I do find it to be one of those issues that when I'm talking to the normies, if you will, that I find it very easy to talk to them about the criminal justice system, about law enforcement in general. I think it's been useful to really like hone the techniques in those conversations because it's such an important issue. And I think I've had some success in converting some pretty hardline people away, not to where they don't support the cops, but they maybe have a different perspective that we have a problem. And you know, and it gives some context, I think, for them for when they see stories that come out every day, it seems like the two I tweeted today. So both of these are in Mississippi, which I thought was interesting. I don't think they're related. The first one is just a video that came out. This is ABC. I don't know if this is old. I don't think it is. The tweet here, Mississippi police officer used a stun gun on a black man who was already handcuffed and complying with officer's commands. Of course, they put the race context to it, but I mean, it is there. Of course, one of the officers, at least one of them, was black as well. But basically, the guy is being handcuffed. He's up against the minivan. He's standing there getting cuffed. And his other cop comes up to him, the one with the glasses on. It's always the guy with the glasses on, and just fires him right in the neck. For no reason. Guy hits the deck, you know, twitching on the ground. The other cops who, you know, I hope in their minds they're thinking like, what the fuck, dude? Why did you just do that? You know, but they just stand there, allow it to happen. Then they go to pick him up, and shockingly, he's having trouble getting to his feet, and he just nails him again, just cuffed. Not from what I could tell in the video, is not resisting. And frankly, like, I don't care what he did up until this moment. I mean, these are supposed to be the people, you know, in society that are granted this special, most of us here don't agree with that, but the special like privilege to use violence against the citizenry. And they seem to be held to the lowest standard. So there's just a tweet here saying that this guy, you know, belongs, you know, behind bars. Unfortunately, the overwhelming majority of these kinds of incidents, they go unprosecuted, and the guy gets, suspended with pay very often, for a while. And then there's an investigation, and then, one way or another, to come out the other side, you know, if at worst, you know, often sometimes they'll lose their job. Usually they keep it, or they're reassigned. And that's it. And you really, really rarely see them being prosecuted. And there was another story. This one was from Radley Balco, who I think fits nicely into this like left libertarian or liberty minded, reason inclined type of, talks to the reason guys a lot, and actually had an interesting episode a year ago on the Fifth Column. But he writes about criminal justice quite a bit, phenomenally, now with the Washington Post. And there's an article he has here, 27th, so 2 days ago. Mississippi cops went to the wrong house and killed an innocent man. Grand jury just refused to indict them. And I would just hope that somebody that's not been exposed to these types of stories, that doesn't go looking for them, would be shocked to just read the basic facts of the story, never mind what actually went down. The cops showed up, but it's pretty apparent they were at the wrong house. It was for a domestic abuse warrant of some kind. There was a dog, immediately shot and killed the dog. And then one of the cops shot through the door and I guess caught this guy in the back of his head and killed him. Of course, they're saying that, you know, he came at them with a gun, and none of the evidence really lines up. They offered no apologies. They made the family clean up the mess. Just really despicable, disgusting behavior. The mayor coming out and just saying repugnant stuff about how, you know, how dare we ever question anything that the police department does. No indictment, no penalties, just normal course of business. This guy apparently was really involved in the Latin community there, the Mexican community. Gave a lot of his time up for charity, and the community is devastated. That community within this larger community is, of course, devastated, and there's just nothing that will come from this, and it won't even get the national attention that it deserves. And because of that, Radley does again great work. It's not going to advance a conversation that is way, way overdue in this country, which is just out of control cops. And it's not in a particular area of the country. This stuff happens all over every single day, really without exception that I've seen. So anyway, not great takeaways there, just some depressing stories.
Well, even more depressing. Have you actually tried to have the police talk with like people in your life? I was actually home a couple weeks ago visiting my parents and tried to bring up the whole, I was telling my dad about that video where that kid gets gunned down in tears, sobbing in a hallway.
In Arizona, it was brutal. Yeah.
Most disgusting thing I've ever seen in my life. And my dad's response to me as he's getting fired up is, well, your brother has a friend who is a police officer, and he showed up. And the guy blew his head off through the door. He's dead. He was a 20-year-old kid. And I'm like, okay, so you have a single anecdote about somebody that you're emotionally charged about. The fact is, this happens all the time. Anyway, my dad, I think, is just pissed because my little brother is a cop and he's overly concerned. But I know it's just such a difficult conversation to have.
Because
feel so amped up about it.
When you say it like that, it sounds like vengeance. Like, okay, I clearly see this act of injustice, but I'm justifying that almost as an act of vengeance because my uncle got shot, my brother got shot. It's just totally crazy. And when I think about this a lot, is violence from cops actually getting worse, or do we see more of it because of the media? And one thing
we
I think
see
about
more
is
of
that,
it, but
I do personally think that. But you also got to think about the fact that, same like the year 1800 before we had instant access to information. There's obviously still violence. You just didn't. Your next door neighbor may have died 2 weeks ago, and you didn't know about it. But nowadays, we just have instant access to information. So any tragedy that goes on, we have instant access to that information. So it's just totally crazy, though. I mean, I do think it's getting worse because the videos I'm seeing. I watched this one video a few weeks ago. There was two or three guys, and they were caught with an open drinking container. The cop walks up to them. One of the guy, he's drunk. He runs off. Cop is chasing him for a while, and running through like a crowd of people, the guy was continually running. He didn't turn around. Cop shoots him in the back as they're running. I don't know if you guys saw that one. I mean, it's just totally insane. There's no justification for shooting somebody over an open container. And their arguments are always the same that, oh, I thought he was reaching for a gun. But even in the video, like he hadn't stopped running. It's not if he like stopped and like turned, like reached in his pockets. He just got shot in the back. I'm pretty sure he died.
Well, there's so much the framing thing about it. I have a unique experience in that I live in Cleveland. And let me tell you about the aftermath of the Tamir Rice shooting and dealing with that particular cop here in Cleveland. It's the other thing that makes it so hard to talk about is that the only people that want to talk about it will only frame it as a race issue. Like, it's always the violence against black people by the police. It's not the violence against people against people by the police.
That was another thing that's going to add. Everybody fuels everybody else because everybody's mad at the cops. So the cops, they argue that, okay, I have to use more force now because everybody hates me. And it's very circular, but it's like everybody feeding into each other.
Hey, Nick, the Tamir Rice thing, that he was a kid, right?
He was 12 years old. I drive past the park where he was shot every single day. Like, it is. And I'm sure you guys have watched the video. Like, there is absolutely no way that any human being has the ability to make a decision in what they classify as the response time. He had his gun drawn before he ever got out of that vehicle. He was there to murder somebody. Now,
was that the kid with the fake gun? Is that the kid?
Yeah, he was a kid. Oh my God, dude. It's like I said, I drive by that park every day and it's a reminder exactly why we have to stay vigilant on this shit. All that happened was the cop was deemed unfit by a previous department. because he had so much anxiety over breaking up with a girl that his commander said we can't rely on him to be a police officer. So then he just goes one district over, takes the test again, and gets in as a cop in another district.
Yeah.
Like it's fucking insane. And no, nothing happens to him. Just let go.
IQ cutoffs, right?
Yeah. No, along those same lines, talking about having conversations with family members, you know, my something like that, not that bad. Thankfully, it wasn't a child, but it was a man who apparently was high on drugs or something and was shot by the police because he wasn't, you know, following their commands quickly enough, or they thought he was a threat or whatever. Anyway, and it was the same thing. They tried to get her. The cop that fired, they tried to get her on manslaughter, which I thought was an imminently provable thing, you know, but she got off and then she leaves the Tulsa PD and goes like one county over and joins their PD. And I'm talking to my dad about this and he's just, I mean, it is, he's just like, oh, you know, we weren't there. We don't know the situation, or, you know, and all this apology. It's so, so frustrating. I mean, if you look it up, there's videos online, and at least from my perspective, it's pretty clear that they had him covered and there was no reason to shoot. But, you know, I don't know. It's frustrating.
It values the military and the police and all this. It values it as being part of the smaller government, which they seek for. When in reality, it's part of big government. The military and the police, they're part of big government. And like you were saying about race, Nick, you know, it all goes back to race, but it ignores the bigger problem, which is abuse of power. To be quite frank, everybody is a victim of, obviously minorities face the worst, but everybody's a victim.
And
of
I'll put my conspiracy hat on foundly on this one, because I absolutely believe that it is an active intention by parties to force it to be a race issue. Because God forbid if the right wingers and the blacks ever fucking decided to join parties on this and just attack the institution of the police, like we'd have economic problems as a nation just dealing with that properly, because it is such a big boondoggle of a situation.
No, they make it about race in areas where you can't. Like, they'll make it about race when it's like an all black police department. I mean, it's what do you
exactly? What is
no? It is. You're absolutely right about
that's
that.
Baltimore's excuse.
Exactly.
No, I mean, it's exactly as you say. If the Second Amendment, don't take my guns, people, and the police brutality people ever join forces to say, hey, you know, this is all part of the same problem, where we have a vastly overreaching federal and state police and a police state and all that, then it would be game over for them. So I mean, as far as conspiracy theories go, I think that one, while maybe we can't prove who exactly the conspirators are, I mean, seems pretty logical that would be their exact move.
I know in particular, Camille Foster's talked to, I can't remember the dude's name because I don't really give a shit. The guy, one of the big leaders in the Black Lives Movement, and the dude's just 100% refused to listen to the logic of it, refused to pay attention to the refused to pay attention to any of the numbers Camille dropped on him when he said this isn't just a black issue, this is an everybody issue. And his basic thing by the end of it was, well, I don't give a shit, I care about the black people, that's it.
I interviewed Maj Torre. I still have that video on my timeline. I interviewed him at the LP convention. He's a great guy. He runs Black Guns Matter. That's a really important movement, because imagine if the black people that are involved in crime in all the inner cities, imagine if they rose up against the government and they stopped shooting each other.
And there's the limited research on it, because you know, generally speaking, like think tanks and investigative groups, like they don't care about white people being imprisoned. But Thad Russell tried looking into this, and he estimated that if you had released every black and brown person in America tomorrow, America would still have the fifth or sixth highest incarceration rate in the world. So if that doesn't speak to, you know, the issue, Jesus.
Well, yeah. You know, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I want to get a different perspective. So Theis, why don't you give us the lay of the land of this topic in your country? Is there anything? I imagine it's not as bad over there. But what's going on over there with you over there?
Yeah, so we do get it's been increasing a little bit, I think, especially the news coverage, but I do think it's less heated, it's less intense here than it is over there. And yeah, I fully agree that to make it a race issue is such a lost opportunity. Or like, if you understand that, yeah, if you understand that it's a state problem, that it's really a shoot first, ask questions later kind of problem, then you can actually do something about it. But with sort of to make it a race thing, you get the sort of back and forth, or conservatives say, oh yeah, that's not true, and then you get white privilege and this and that, and everyone just pushes against each other. But yeah, it's completely unproductive. And yeah, we had a couple incidents here as well. And it's also across racial lines somewhat, but yeah, it's not as bad as there, I think. Yeah.
Now, I know the racial makeup is obviously different in the Netherlands. I mean, is there an issue with more Middle Easterners that are put in cages more often? Or I imagine the African population is less than the US, but I really don't know. I'm just guessing at that point. What's the situation? What's the lay of the land?
Yeah, so ethnically, we do have a lot less black people, but we do also have some, like in Suriname, there was in South Africa, no, it's not South Africa, in South America, that's a black country, and we do have some migrants from there. But there's a lot of Turkish migrants and Moroccan migrants in particular.
Interesting.
Here they are. Our minorities here, basically, and there's also kind of an overrepresentation problem, and you get the sort of ethnic, you get the sort of gangs across ethnic lines, and yeah, it's similar problems but different ethnic makeup. Yeah.
All right. Hey, Daniel, are you still around? You got anything to add to this?
Well, I always bring it back to the monopoly justice provision means that you get lower quality and higher prices and no incentive for improvement or redress. And you talked about internal affairs investigating something. It's like the perpetrator investigating themselves on whether they did anything wrong. It reminds me of how court systems are, you know, like the Supreme Court
exactly where it's going.
Determine whether something's constitutional or not. Well, if the state wants to do it, the state's the one deciding whether it's okay to do it. Yeah. So I just
the
bring
idea
it back
of
to
a
that,
Supreme
you know,
Court.
Yeah, you know, bring, just
this other branch of the same company says we can do it, so we're cool, right?
Yeah, we have investigated ourselves and we found no wrongdoing. Yeah,
it's suicide with two shots in the back of the head.
Yeah, that's the gist of it, man. And you know, I always wonder, like, how are these people, and I'm pretty sure we're going to need to wrap this up pretty soon here, but it always reminds me, Trey Weaver of the Subversion Webcast, he's also a member of the Libertarian Union, he did a short video about what if Walmart had cops that did things to you like this, or forced you to pay taxes, or made you put your kids in Walmart schools, and things like that, and like how different would public perception be if it was a private company doing these things to you rather than a so-called government of the people doing it to you. The same actions are happening, right? But for whatever reason, it's in the culture that companies and private things are evil and out to get you. Meanwhile, government is there to protect you and provide benevolence. Yet, like I mentioned earlier, the approval rating of Congress is single digits. Trump is literally Hitler. Like, half the country's freaking out, thinking that he's like the worst thing ever, but they also want him to take all the guns away from private citizens and only have the government have guns, and he's in charge of the government. Wait, that's not going to work, is it? Anyway, that's my two cents on this. I know we mostly focus on movies on our show, but yeah, the cop thing is rough. I like Higgs and his point that he basically says there's no good cops because every cop has sworn an oath to uphold every law that exists, right or wrong. And so because many laws are immoral and unjust, and because those cops have sworn to uphold them, then there are no good cops.
That was the quote I was thinking of by Higgs earlier. And, you know, I think about that one a lot. I think the logic of it is flawless. Like, I mean, you know, you sign up to be a cop, you realize, you know, you're about to enforce these hundreds of thousands of laws in the books. You can't possibly agree with them all. And there's the fact that, I don't know if all cops say this, but many of them say, you know, when I signed up to do this, or whether it's signing up to be in the military, signing up to be a police officer, I mean, you're kind of young and dumb, and you know, you don't really read the Constitution before you swear to it, which isn't an excuse, but I think in their minds, that's how they kind of justify it. So I would argue that, you know, there is such a thing as a good cop, but all good cops will realize what they're doing and leave the force. Maybe I'll write a book about, I was a police officer and I hated it. And our good friend Mike Dan, you know, I had him on because he was a police officer, and you know, he just talks about how he was young and dumb, and you know, you're given power and you abuse it. But you know, when he got out, it's like, oh my God, I can't believe I used to do some of this stuff. I can't believe, you know, he gave me some examples of just, you know, random people that he was just abusing power just to abuse it, and he didn't really think about that till later on. So, it's a really tough topic. Like I do want to say that there's no such thing as a good cop, but I also know that a lot of these people were just young and dumb. And I, my grandfather, for example, he joined the Marines when he was like 17. I don't think he really cared about going off and going fighting in the Korean War. He was homeless. He was, you know, setting up pins in a bowling alley. He came from a family of like 7 or 8 kids. So imagine growing up in poverty and having 7 or 8 brothers. I mean, there's no food on the table. So it's just an impossible situation. I do try to feel for the people that, you know, they signed up out of from an impossible situation, but obviously it's no excuse. So I don't know. I find it hard where to draw that line.
It's a hard line to draw because you have obviously people who are probably volunteering or entering into these lines of service with some preconception of liberty, and like their idea is like, oh, we're fighting for freedom. You know what I'm saying?
My daddy was in the police officer. My grandfather was in the police officer. My family goes back generations. Lieutenant Dan, he had to fight and die in the war because all his family members had fought and died in the war from Forrest Gump.
My little brother's a cop.
So you can't blame them all for maybe having like a conception or an understanding of liberty that is, not as refined and not as, I guess, narrow as ours. And I think for sure we have the right perception of it. We understand it in a way that will bring the world to a more peaceful and better place ultimately in the future. But, you know, I do find it hard to bring it back to the LP stuff. When you have guys like Arvin Vora who are just like shitting all over everybody who's
almost
in the
like
military
purposely,
or in the police.
Like, you realize what you're saying and doing, like it has to be purposeful. Like there's no way you're like making these accidental, you know, bloops or whatever.
Well, I mean, did you hear his excuse on that? Mark Claire talked to him on one of the episodes of Lions of Liberty, and his excuse was that he worked for 3 years in that same position and using a timid messaging and nobody listened to him. And he's like, I found out that there were people in the LP who supported public education and thought that that was a completely reasonable thing to think as a libertarian. And he said, well, that was total bullshit. So I, you know, my last year I tried to up the messaging and be more noticeable, essentially. I don't know how much of that I believe.
Okay, but so even if we follow that line of
reputation from that, you know,
yeah, even if we follow that line of reasoning, it's like, okay, we can be like, you know, really shocking, you know, we can really throw our stuff out there and make people, you know, get like freaked out. But compare what he did to like what Ron Paul did. I mean, I don't think Ron Paul was like out there like trying to shock people. I mean, he said some things that did shock people, but it was from a more, you know,
sensidental
Well, my bigger complaint with Arvin is that, look, it's if you're going to be shocking, at least be shocking about conversations that people are having. Like the shit that he'd get all up in arms about and say crazy stuff is nobody's having that conversation. They don't give a fuck what you think. All they're going to do is think you're nuts. Like if you're going
to
do that.
No one wants to argue about pedophiles. I mean, whether.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, no, I know exactly. Violence. Pedophile rights is not something that as the LP, I want to be pushing for or anything.
Well, yeah. And you almost get the feeling that like these type of guys are like, it's like a little circle jerk. Like, let's just like, oh, let's just shock people. Let's just, let's just say the bullshit that people are going to eventually freak out about, or like people might look at us and say, oh, look at those crazy guys. But well, it's not really addressing like actual things that most of the culture are talking
about. Can somebody summarize who we're talking about? Cause I'm not actually sure. And I would,
we're talking about,
he was the vice president of the LP National Committee.
Yeah. He was under Sarwark. He was just a little bit,
the guy Merced took out.
Yeah. And he was, you know, he was hating on the military like outright. He was hating on police outright, which, listen, honestly, philosophically, I think I probably am aligned with him. And
problem. Like, he's really good on many things. It's just like you almost can't align with him because, dude, you're just going to drag me through the mud.
Yeah, because he just wants to shit on people. Instead of convincing people, he wants to take like a whole group of people and just be like, you fucking suck. You know,
you should have a podcast instead of being in a leadership position of a political party.
Exactly.
Right. No,
like,
exactly.
I have a few friends that they just love Arvin. Like, I can't bash them because they just love Arvin. Like, that's the problem with people. I bash Bill Weld. I give you like five real life examples of where he said he wants to ban bump stocks. He said that pistols are just as much of a problem as rifles, blah, blah, blah. They don't care because why? Because they had dinner with Bill Weld. My God. I mean, they had dinner with him and he was nice and he smiled. And, you know, how can you hate Bill Weld? Because I had dinner with him. I mean, these are the piss poor arguments in reality. But this is what people were saying. I just want to make one note about Ron Paul. I mean, I think about that. The fact that Ron Paul acquired more veteran donations than like all the other candidates combined or something.
Yep.
And he didn't do that by going out saying, you know, veterans are evil. They go up and blow up everybody. He did it in a much more different and philosophical way. He said, you know, you guys are all stuck there. You guys don't even know you're doing this stuff. I mean, we're controlled. We have so many bases around the world. And he came out of an angle that I don't think he would have gotten that support.
Who joins to become a cop or signs up to become a cop or joins the military as like a like infantry type dude,
right?
Because they have some like deep philosophical connection with like the mission at hand. And look, if we're looking at a way to sort of square this, the way that I've done this personally is in like this liberty, because I'm pretty like non-confrontational, like physically at least, you know, and I don't we're trying to strive for like a more peaceful society. But in like this libertarian utopia that I think some of us imagine, there's still going to be bad guys and there's still going to be security forces. It's just that you're going to hope that they're sort of, you know, trained properly and they're not trigger happy. And, aside from the fact that we have this, you know, as Dan said, the one size fits all monopoly, structure, on top of it, you have just like really, really horrific specific policies, which just compound the problem along with this, cultural issue, which, you know, makes it impossible to say anything, negative about it. But, there's an episode where, with Scott on Scott Horton's show where he has Michael Bell on, and he's had him on a bunch of times, but Michael Bell basically is a former, I don't know if he's a former cop, I think he's a former military. So there you go. And his son was killed by a cop in totally absurd fashion behind the house. You know, I guess I don't care what he did. He was not about to kill a cop, and the cop came back and by all accounts murdered him. And so, you know, he's been looking for justice ever since then. And he succeeded recently after a hell of a lot of work in Wisconsin to get, and somebody jump in and please correct me if I don't have the specifics right, but basically he got a law passed, which says that like the police department where the cop was part of, that is being investigated for a crime like this cannot be the one that investigates like the situation. It's got to be another one in the state. Now, I'm still not satisfied with that, but that's like one of the only laws like that in the entire fucking country. And within that interview, I don't know which one it is. I want to say it's from like January or February. It could be older because I know that he's been doing a an effort. He's had an effort to get his old interviews up on YouTube, so it might be older. But he got into it with him a little bit about this this court ruling that I need to learn more about, where it was basically decided that only other cops and other police departments have the expertise to be able to rule on whether or not a cop was, quote, like following his training, which is apparently the only standard that they need to meet. And the guy was defending that, and Scott was, he's like, well, you don't want some librarian out there, you know, like in a jury, like deciding if the cop was doing the right thing. And he's like, well, what do you got against librarians? And you know, Michael Bell laughed, but he was being serious. He's like, look, in every other area of criminal justice, if there's something wrong in like neurosurgery, you're going to have a jury of your peers, and you're going to bring in experts, and you're going to go through the normal process. It's only with cops that there's this ridiculous standard. And you can watch documentaries like, was it the 7-5? It's a little old now, but I only just watched it on Netflix. And there's a newer one about the LA riots. And you can see how and why this culture develops of just defend, you know, your brother, defend the other cop, regardless of what he's doing. And so it shouldn't be a surprise with laws like this in place that this is the system that we have.
And then it's the question of how many of us nerds are sitting around and like exposing this stuff. I mean, sadly, just a lot of people don't care. They've never read the Constitution. They don't know any of the laws. I was listening to this one TED talk, and his first question was, How many of y'all consider yourselves intellectuals? Like, you read a lot, you study a lot. Almost everybody in the audience raised their hand. The next question was, what was the last law passed in your district? Almost nobody raised their hand. So kind of the point is, like, you think you're smart, you think you know what's going on in politics, and most people are completely unaware of what's going on around them. So, you know, the laws you're talking about, by the way, you should talk to Michael Heiss. I think he used to work with a cop block. I really like what they do. I like what the Free Thought Project does, all these people that are exposing what's going on. It's just totally insane. I guess my main point was that I do kind of agree that there's no such thing as a good cop that's going to sway current cops away from what they're doing. I think there's got to be a better argument. And I think there needs to be a better argument there.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think?
I agree. I don't have anything to add. I don't know. Does anybody else have anything to add? I'm sorry to.
Oh, sorry. Does everyone want to go?
We're coming up on time.
Yeah. No, that was, I think that was well said.
All right. So apologies for the abrupt truncation, but I'm going to go to Theis. Theis, we're going to be shutting down now. We're going to go down the line. So why don't you tell everyone about your show, about what you talk about, and where we can find you.
Okay, yeah. So I'm not launched yet, but I hope to launch very soon. I think like August 1st, if I can make it. I'm on gaiuslib.com and same name basically on Facebook and Twitter as well. And I'm you can find me on the Libertarian Union website as well. And I plan to talk about law and liberty and current events and a bit mixture like that.
Okay. Okay. Daniel, you're up.
Hey, Daniel Elwood. If I haven't turned you off by now, listen to our show where we talk about movies from a Rothbardian and anarcho-capitalist perspective, or we also do real unconventional film analysis. And that's at actualanarchy.com and libertarianunion.com is where everything's at. Lastnighters.com. So those are the two shows. And our next episode is going to be on Gladiator, and that's coming out next Sunday. So tune in for that, and you shall be entertained.
Crowd pleaser.
Dan has so many websites, he's got to like read them off the list. Like, oh, yeah, I have these 10 websites.
Black and gold. Go to it.
Yeah, black and
gold. Rothbard.com.
You guys know me better than myself. All right.
And normally I like to throw off the advertising, but let's give it to Jeff. Jeff, why don't you tell us about Don't Waste Your Hate
You son of a bitch. I don't know. You got a piece of a taste of it in this this episode. Basically, what we did here is more or less what we do there. We just cover some current events. Occasionally, we'll actually try to research a particular philosophical point within libertarianism. Sometimes we just talk about other things. We covered Bourdain recently. I think he had some influence over us and a lot of cultural stuff in general. And then we're supposed to, we're charged with covering some New Jersey topics, which we try to do as well. We have a socialist, more or less, governor in charge. And so he gives us plenty of material as well.
All right. And next up, Kenny L. Wizard, tell us, where have you been? What are you doing?
Well, so as I mentioned, I'm really focusing my efforts on the Tulsa County. And so if anybody listening is in Tulsa County and you agree with these ideas, come help me out. I would very much appreciate it. As far as, you know, I'm still kind of keeping one oar in at libertariannerds.com, Wizardly Wisdom at wizardlywisdom.libsyn.com, Libertarian Nerds on Facebook, so you can always find me over there.
Very good. And next we'll go to Nick Pacone. I was privileged to be a guest on the Sounds Like Liberty podcast with Nikki P. and Lizzie P. Tell us what's up over there.
Today I actually, right before this, had a great interview with Will Porter, a guy who likes to talk about foreign policy for, you know, somebody who sits here and complains about talking about foreign policy too much. That should be coming out on Wednesday. We're doing the same thing still at soundslikelibertypodcast.com. If you're interested in talking about music and liberty, we talk to everybody. I'm not just about luminaries in the liberty movement. I like to hear what just normal libertarians think and listen to. Because for me, it's all about building the culture, making us a cohesive thing, where even if we disagree on some of the politics, we can agree that we're all good people, which is the big thing that I think that the Republicans and Democrats have on us, is that they take for granted that, oh, these are good people. Whereas it seems like libertarians don't do that for each other. So it's really trying to help build that community. Evil.
They all just want our money.
Yeah. And much like Mr. Wizardly Wisdom over there said, I'm in charge of the LPMC Ohio group on Facebook, and it's pretty slim pickings for us. So if you're interested in getting involved with the Libertarian Party and you're like these ideas, get a hold of me. Look me up on Facebook at Nick Pacone. Or LPMC-Ohio. And let's start getting out there and into the world, making some changes.
Beautiful. All right. Next is Stephen Clyde of the Peace and Liberty podcast. I know you went pretty hardcore in the beginning. You were going 5 episodes a week. And I imagine that was difficult for you.
I just kind of got backed up. I mean, I'm about to start like a really hard school semester. It's not that I can't do 5 days a week. It's just I'm just going to build up my supply of episodes so I can put them out in an easy to put out fashion. 5 days a week, I mean, I can do it. It's just by the time I get like the video edited, like I don't have much time to do anything else. I had Nathan Fraser on my show, and he's a good guy. If you're interested in marketing, you should talk to Nathan Fraser. But he's basically saying, you know, 5 days a week for someone that's not like a PhD historian like Tom Wynn's, like, you should take the other 2 days and try to market yourself. So I'm going to try to do that. I'm also personally just working on my book right now. Just like reading all day right now. So doing a little less of social platform stuff right now. I'm just focusing on my studies. In a few years, once I'm done with my degrees and all that, like I'll have, you know, 40, hopefully 50 plus years to put out good work, but taking a little less time to do podcasting and just kind of studying right now. But yeah, I'm curious if Dan, if I was able to sway you into joining the LP, because I used the whole "what would Murray do?" that trying to guilt you into it.
Close, but no cigar, sir. But you know,
what if I pay for the membership in Bitcoin? Oh, that's like a double no, right?
Well, double negative, right? Two negatives make a positive.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, I support the concept. I think that having a true libertarian voice out there in the world is a good thing. And I think it's all about getting where the platform is and where people are going to be able to hear the message. Like we all have shows, we all have websites, and we try to push the message as best we can. But, you know, the reach there is a bit more limited, and people pay a lot more attention to politics, rightly or wrongly. I think wrongly, but the fact of the matter is they do. So you got to be where the people are. You got to you know, we're the gladiators in the arena, right? We got to get him entertained.
Basically, what I'm hearing is that I'm going to sign Dan up for the LP, and he's gonna receive a card at his house, and that's going to happen.
That's exactly what he said, for sure. No, and I think I'm slowly getting to that point. I've been delaying, but I think I might enter the arena as well over here in New Jersey. But yeah, everybody who's listening, I mean, we're going to share this, not only on the Libertarian Union YouTube channel, but, everyone I'm sure will be sharing it on their own podcast feed. So if you are, lacking in your, content, take a look at all of these podcasts. Other podcasts of the Libertarian Union that, were not represented today would be, Trey Weaver, the Subversion Webcast, as well as Patrick McFarlane of Liberty Weekly, ANCAP Barbershop. I'm sure there's a few more. You could check out libertarianunion.com for that. All of them are great. I've listened to everybody's podcast, and there's a lot of great content. I mean, Stephen Clyde, for example, I remember listening to his episode on the Anatomy of the State by Rothbard. He does a lot of good book summaries, which really are good because there's so much good content in them, and you get to really learn, like, okay, it's beyond the libertarian talking points. You learn a little bit more detail as to how to converse with people with these with opposing views. You get to put in some detailed libertarian commentary. And so Stephen Clyde's podcast is great for that, for example. And all of these other guys have podcasts that provide equally valuable information. So check us all out at libertarianunion.com. We do one of these every month. And of course, we also guest on each other's podcasts all the time. Daniel, myself, as well as Trey Weaver, we've all been on Patrick's podcast recently doing a review of the Netflix documentary Wild Wild Country. So that's at libertyweekly.net/WWC, I believe. Check that out. That was a very good series, and we had some interesting takes. It's actually ongoing. We're about halfway through that at this point. So there's a lot of information. There's a lot of content out there from the Libertarian Union, guys. So I want to thank everybody for coming on, and just check us out, libertarianunion.com, my podcast, don'twasteyourhate.com, and all these other people. You already heard about them. So take care, y'all.
Peace.
Thanks, guys. See you later.
Peace.